Coming up on the 19th of March is World Social Work Day. One might dare to say it's a largely unsung profession that has, since its beginnings in this country in the early 20th century, proved vital to the health and well-being of so many of us. So who were the early social workers and how did the profession evolve to what it is today? Jane Miller is a retired social worker and author who's documented the way in which social work education was established in Victoria. Her book, Social Betterment, Social Work Education in Australia, tells, for the first time, the history of Australian social work education from 1900 to 1960, a story of a fight for standards and the tenacity of a group of women and a few men who are determined to improve care and conditions for those most vulnerable in our community. Hello and welcome, Jane.
Good morning.
So tell us, what is the definition of social work?
Social workers are university educated, these days normally a master's, and they work in a counselling role with people who are at a crisis point in their lives. But unlike, for example, counsellors in general and psychologists, they also reach out into the community to effect change for individuals and groups.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what made you want to become a social worker?
Well, go back to the 1950s. I was an idealistic 18-year-old and I heard about social work. I wanted to do something with my life which would make a contribution to society. And strangely enough, things like West Side Story, which is based in New York, which was one of the centres of social work, even mentioned social workers in their songs, and it seemed like an interesting thing to do and
do
worthwhile.
They? Which song was that, Jane?
Oh, it's one where could the young delinquents, it's about Officer, whatever his name is, and there's... They raise the dilemma of are they mad, bad, or just neglected?
Right, fantastic. Mm. I suspect that the reasons that you've given for going into social work are common to most people who do, is that right? A sort of idealism and then a desire to help and give back to society?
Well, I should hope so. I really can't comment on that, but I think a lot of especially young people do look at the world we're in and think that perhaps they could do something to make it a better place, and it's certainly a good profession if that's mm-hmm. what somebody's interests are.
Mm-hmm. And when did social work come to Australia? What sort of Australia were we living
strangely,
in at that time?
Very strangely. Australia, which was famous for having the 8-hour day, a basic wage before any other country, and women's suffrage very early, was very late in having social work. It came 30 years after other countries like England, America, China, India, you name it. In 1929, it started in Australia. Before the Great Depression, just before the Great Depression.
Right. Mm. And were social workers by and large women?
Yes, they always have been, which I think is a shame. But yes, they have been. But there have been some extremely, really outstanding men as well.
Can you tell us what's the origin of the occupation of the social worker?
Well, That's practically the whole book, but I think that we could say that in Victoria it was the Charity Organisation Society, and in New South Wales it was the National Council of Women, and it was the idea of charity and philanthropy had, I think, always been with us in our sort of society, but it was the recognition that it was what was happening was muddled, random, not particularly fair, and a wish to make the support of people who'd fallen through the cracks in society better, and to use a body of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Angela Caterns. We're talking about the history of social work with Jane Miller, who's a life member of the Australian Association of Social Workers, and she's written a book on the history of social work in Australia. So what was the dilemma facing the early social work proponents in creating education? How could they prepare young and inexperienced middle-class women to help poor and disadvantaged individuals and families change the course of their lives using the skills of this new profession, social work?
Yes. Well, I think, first of all, they had there was a need to change the attitude. It was not to be an attitude of a patronising attitude of, we know what's best for you and we'll tell you what you need to do. The attitude was, you have a problem, please tell us your problem and we will help you to find the solution to it. And that was really the big mantra of our first Melbourne social worker educator, Jocelyn Hislop, who was English. And she really took on the Melbourne establishment, saying, it's the client's problem, it's not your problem, and within them and their lives, it's your job to help them find a solution, not to judge them, but to help them to find a better way to through their issues.
Mm. Tell us a bit more, if you will, about Jocelyn Hislop. You said she came from England?
Yes, she had 3 degrees from the London School of Economics. When she came to Australia in 1933, she was the most highly trained social worker in Australia. She'd come to a place where there was no history of social work, so the thought of setting up a school of social work where you don't actually have a body of people who can help to teach the students from their own experience was, to say the least, extremely challenging. She'd had an extremely sad life herself. Her mother had died when she was 3, and she'd spent most of her life in boarding schools, and so she'd not had, you know, the best of beginnings in life, but she had enormous empathy with children. And she went and I think that Professor Boyce Gibson said she fought in season and out for the profession of social work and helped to establish it very firmly in the University of Melbourne by 1940, which wasn't bad going.
Mm-hmm. And tell us how our system differed to the British and the American systems. Why did the American approach gain more respect, in a sense?
Well, the British social work system early in the piece diverged to being more social science. The Americans very cleverly researched on what the social worker were doing, what worked, what didn't work, and they built their training around that knowledge. So they helped. It's a very practical profession, and one of the things Miss Hislop did was increase the amount of practical work the students did to about 50% of their course. And so the Americans were the people who understood what they then called social casework, and so that was why Australians looked to them. It was nothing to do with America versus Britain. It was to do with who's got the knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Let me put to you this interesting text from Bernie in Sydney, Jane. An interesting history perspective. It seems that a lot of religious sisters, no government backing, pioneered social workers in Australia. Alas, their contributions seem not to be recognised. What do you think about that comment?
It's an interesting point of view. I think religious sisters had quite a different role. Yes, they were philanthropic, but it was quite a different approach. And in fact, even in the 1940s, religious sisters were training in social work because some religious orders very much saw that more could be gained if you had some actual skills, not just goodwill and a good intent. And I think Bernie might be interested to know that the second really famous social worker in Australia, Norma Parker, who spent most of her career in Sydney, had actually been sent to the Catholic University in Washington by the Catholic Church in Western Australia to train as a social worker. So the Catholic Church was very interested in social work.
Mm. And by the 1960s, social workers were widely employed across Victoria, a lot in psychiatric social work. What was happening at this time, Jane?
Yes, I think that what was interesting here in Victoria, well, actually, that from the very beginning, there was an undersupply of social workers. They could never keep up with the demand. But after the war, there were far more government departments wanting to employ social workers, federal and state. Then in the late 1950s, Victoria had an inspirational head of their mental health system, Dr. Cunningham Dax. Um, he he did a lot of things to change mental health institutions. This is before actual deinstitutionalisation. But he wanted social workers employed en masse to help to smooth the way for patients going home so that they could return to their homes safely and not be kept in mental hospitals for an unduly lengthy periods of time. Mm-hmm. So they were the bridge between the hospital and the mental health system. And it was really Dr. Cunningham Dax's, he was one of those charismatic leaders at the time. He also introduced art into mental hospitals, and that was a very big issue at the time.
Oh. Mm. And what do you see as the biggest challenge in the future for social work and social workers?
Well, I think somebody described social work as a chameleon profession. It is embedded in its own society. I think the challenge for our society in the future, the greatest challenge is going to be climate change, and I would like to see social workers involved in various levels in helping people to adapt to climate change. And I think we will possibly be seeing climate change migrants to Australia from the Pacific, and I think social workers, just as during the and after the Second World War, they played a really important role with Red Cross and UNRWA. I think they will be playing a role in helping people to settle into our society and our society to accept them. That's just possibly fanciful, but that's a possibility.
Yes, well, what an interesting prediction you've made there. Jane, terrific to have you on Life Matters today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Jane Miller, retired social worker and author of For Social Betterment, Social Work Education in Australia, and it's out through Monash University Publishing.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations, live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.